In 2002, an ancient limestone ossuary, which is a box for bones, bearing the inscription James, son of Joseph, brother of Jesus, was made public by its Israeli owner. Media around the world trumpeted it as the first material evidence of the existence of Jesus Christ. A huge find with special implications to fundamentalist Christians, Jews, historians, and the eccentric world of million-dollar biblical relic collectors. There's only one problem. After a two-year investigation, authorities in Israel have called it the fraud of the century. And today it is exhibit number one in a forgery trial in Israel involving hundreds of biblical-era relics and five prominent scholars and collectors. The new book, which chronicles this absolutely amazing story, is Unholy Business, a true tale of faith, greed, and forgery in the Holy Land. And we are honored to have the author on the line. Nina Burley joins us. Nina, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. And how are you?
Very good. Thank you for spending some time with us. I have to ask you, and we won't let you go without getting the latest updates, because I know there's some news that's broken on this story just in the last few days. But tell us first when this came across your radar. When did you first find out about this story? And then when did you realize, oh my gosh, I got a book here?
Well, it was 2004, Christmas time, and I was sitting in my house in upstate New York writing a book about archaeologists who discovered the Rosetta Stone, a completely different subject. And I was trying to channel the Sahara Desert, and, you know, I had been in and out of the Middle East quite a bit to do the book. And I noticed this article in the New York Times, five men indicted for forging a very, very, very important object of biblical archaeology that had purported to be the first material evidence of Jesus Christ's existence. And I read that with much interest because I'm, very interested in people of faith. As I've gotten older, I'm not a very religious person, but I've become more and more interested in religion and people who are fervently believing in and the idea of faith. And then I thought, well, how interesting that people of faith want material proof. And isn't that kind of something that doesn't really go together? And then I thought, and then what kind of devious person would do this? So it intrigued me, and I finished the other book over a period of 2 years and had this thing sort of in the back of my mind percolating. And then in around 2006, I guess, I had been kind of paying attention to it and noted the trial was still going on, and talked to my editor, and she said, you know, I'm interested. Why don't you go see if there's anything to it? Now, I'd never been to Israel before. I'd been a lot of places in the Middle East, Baghdad, Iraq, you know, I'd covered stuff for the papers, but I hadn't actually been to Jerusalem. So I took a flight over, a quick five-day trip, just to see if I could talk to the major players. And I got off the plane in Tel Aviv, and immediately was kind of hustled off to a room to be kind of questioned, because my passport had a lot of stamps from Arab countries. And from that moment on, I felt like I was in a movie. The entire time. When I went back, I got to Tel Aviv. I got invited into the lair of this billionaire collector whose apartment overlooks the Mediterranean, who has 600,000 articles of biblical archaeology secreted away in warehouses in Geneva and in his apartment. And he was one of the big gulls of these forgers. He was a big buyer of this material. Right away, I met with the detective who spent 2 years of his life toiling against great odds to expose this case, this forgery, and spent some time with him. And then, you know, walked around the back streets of Old City Jerusalem, and kind of, you know, in my jet-lagged state, popped into these little shops, which I don't know if how many of your listeners have ever been there on the Holy Land tour, but wherever you go, there are these shops that are just piled to the rafters with ancient or purportedly ancient stuff, Mameluke swords and Herodian oil lamps and Roman coins that might have been held in the very hands of the money changers and the Bible. And so I went and popped my head into these shops and found people who wanted to talk to me. And I came back. It was a whirlwind trip, and I came back to the States 5 days later. And, you know, I have a family here in New York, a husband and two small kids, and I said, you know what, I can do this. And there are people there that want to talk about this. Furthermore, I'm completely jazzed by this story. I felt like I stepped into the Maltese Falcon or something.
Yeah, yeah. Nina Burley is an adjunct professor at the Columbia University Graduate School of Journalism. She's written for the Associated Press, Chicago Tribune, Time. She's a staff writer at People Magazine, and her new book is Unholy Business, A True Tale of Faith, Greed, and Forgery in the Holy Land, and we'll be giving away a free copy here at the end of the interview. So, Nina, tell us about this purported discovery, which I shouldn't say purported, it was reported in, you know, media outlets around the world.
The James Ossuary.
The James Ossuary. Tell us about it, like how big this is, what it looks like.
It's a little limestone box, maybe about 2 feet by 1 foot or two feet by 3 feet. It's not a coffin-sized box. And what they used to do for about 90 years during the period of Christ's lifetime, the ancient Jews would bury their dead this way. They would put their dead in caves for a year, and then they would come back and the bones were left. They would take the bones and put them in these little boxes. And sometimes they would scratch on the name, like, or Mama, you know, or they'd put, you know, the name James. And so in this case, this box was, and there are so many of these boxes around Jerusalem, by the way, that people use them as planters. I mean, they're very, very common. But when they have an inscription on them, then they're more rare. And if they have a fancy inscription, like in fancy writing or a design, then they're actually worth some money. And so this thing popped up in a private collector's collection. He showed it to a scholar sometime before 2002. He showed it to this French ex-seminarian who was very expert in the history of the church. And he looked at it and he said, that's important. Now, the collector to this day maintains his innocence. He's been charged with the crime of forging it. What they say he did was it probably had the word James on it already, and that he added very carefully in ancient Hebrew lettering, brother of Jesus, at the end of the phrase. And then he took soil from chalk from actual archaeological sites, of which there are 30,000 in the state of Israel alone. He took some chalk and water, and he made this paste and glued it in to the lettering so that it would look like the letters were as old as the rest of the box. And this passed muster with, first of all, the scholar who was an expert in writing in ancient church history. He looked at it and he said, oh, you know, this is important because, first of all, I can date it to 63 A.D. when brother James, the brother of Jesus, died. And then second of all, most of these ossuaries would never have the mention of brother in an inscription. So I think that the mention of a brother means that whoever this brother was had to be a very important brother to be added to the coffin. So,
and just to clarify, it wasn't the box that supposedly held the bones of Jesus.
No,
it was the brother of Jesus, James.
Yes, and the collector, who's a secular Israeli and Jewish, said, I didn't think it was important because I didn't know that Christ had a brother. So anyway, this thing becomes famous because this French epigrapher brings it to the attention of a Washington, D.C.-based lawyer and publisher named Herschel Shanks, who publishes something called the Biblical Archaeology Review, which is a very colorful kind of magazine for people who are really interested in biblical archaeology, but it's really for amateurs.
Yeah.
Excuse me, I have to call.
It's a popular magazine.
It's a popular magazine, but, you know, scholars write for it because they get exposure that way.
Right.
And other alleged forgeries have been brought forth also through this magazine. Not that they're saying that Herschel Shanks is involved in the forging, but what happened was he found out about this. He immediately published the article in his magazine, and he was the one who arranged the worldwide press conference in Washington. He got a movie deal cut. He sold the film rights, and he sold book rights. He wrote a book about it. So it became extremely famous. And then he also talked a Canadian museum into exhibiting the box, and tens of thousands of people stood in January in Ontario, Canada, outside waiting for a chance to silently walk past this amazing object. Now, what happened was,
and it must be, we just want to admit, it must be pretty cool looking too, because the box
say,
is really old, right?
It's old. I mean, it's genuinely old. But I have to say, I saw it in the headquarters of what they call the Israeli Antiquities Authority, which is a place that is supposed to monitor all of these sites and things that are found in the sites there.
Yeah.
And by the way, they're always plundered. So that's what this authority is supposed to keep sites from being plundered. And they, I saw it in a basement room where there were hundreds of them on shelves.
Oh, gosh.
And the particular James was on a table because a lot of journalists were coming through to look at it. And I have to say, it wasn't all that impressive. Like, there were actually prettier ones. But anyway, if you're religious, it was like a big, big deal. Okay?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why the Israeli authorities eventually called it the fraud of the century, because they were just fooling with people's beliefs, millions of people.
The book is Unholy Business, A True Tale of Faith, Greed, and Forgery in the Holy Land, and we're honored to be talking to the author, Nina Burley. So, Nina, when did the crack in this great find first start to take place?
Well, okay, that's what I was going to start to tell you. The detective at the Israel Antiquities Authority, he's an archaeologist scholar, cop. He's a cop. He carries a weapon, and he does arrest people, but he's also an archaeologist. And he was sitting in his office when he first heard about this thing, and he knew nothing about it. So that kind of irritated him that it had been CNN was calling him for comment, and here's this thing already out of Israel. He's never heard of it, and it's a world-shaking, important object. But he kind of put it on the back burner. He thought that maybe it was a stolen thing, but it wasn't on the front of his list of things to do. What happened was around the same time, another object came out of the private market very mysteriously in Israel. A man started going around with this thing attached, this tablet in a briefcase, handcuffed to his wrist, showing it off to people at the Israel Museum and the Geological Survey of Israel to get it validated. It's a tablet that has 16 lines of text that are almost identical to text in one of the Old Testament books, referring to repairs to Solomon's temple, repairs being made by King Joash to the first temple. Now, the first temple is another thing in the Bible of which there's never been archaeological evidence that it existed. It's a very old place. If it existed, they haven't found like a rock that relates to it or writing or anything. To have this piece of proof is a huge issue for Israelis, because if your listeners are aware, the Temple Mount, when you look at a picture of Jerusalem, the famous picture is the Gold Dome. And the Gold Dome is on top of something that's called the Temple Mount, that the Israelis call the Temple Mount. However, it's controlled by the Arabs, and there's a mosque on top of it right now. And when you see people at the Wailing Wall,
yeah,
Orthodox Jews praying, that's the side and the bottom of this great big mount upon which the temple that is in the Bible, the Jewish temple, ancient temple, used to sit.
Oh, okay.
But from 700 AD on, a mosque has been on top of it. And so right now, Muslims control the top of it. But periodically, Israeli nationalists, super religious people, Christians and Jews will say, it's time for us to take that back. You know, and it's a very, very contentious spot. So this thing, making its way around in the private market very mysteriously, provoked the government to say to this detective, you need to find that. What is this thing? This is pouring fuel on gasoline on a fire. So he put all his efforts into finding this tablet, and he ended up kind of tracing it to this collector who also owned the ossuary.
Ah.
And the collector played a cat and mouse game with him for a year. Didn't admit that he owned it. Didn't show it to him. And finally, he cornered him. The detective cornered him, and he had to confess that he owned it. And then, so now the government had in their hands both the ossuary and the tablet.
That came from the same guy.
Came from the same guy, and when they went into his house on a warrant, they found what they thought was a workshop for fakes. They found all this half-made stuff.
Ah.
They found blueprints for more things. And they finally found an Egyptian craftsman living in Cairo who confessed to them that he made stuff for this guy on his orders. However, the trial has begun. It's been going on for 3 years.
So this guy was taken to trial then by, I guess, the State of Israel.
Oh, yes, the State of Israel. So the State of Israel indicts, and that's what I read about in 2004, the indictment. They indicted five men. They thought that dealers in the antiquities were involved with the forgery. But they ended up, three of the guys got off. They were let go. Like, they were not meant to, there were statute of limitations issues. They didn't have enough evidence. So who are left at the trial is this forger collector guy and a major, major dealer who's alleged to have been involved in kind of bringing the stuff to the marks.
And the news that's broken in the last few days is what?
The news that broke in the last few days was, after 3 years, the judge, it's a judge, not a jury, who's making the decision, said to the prosecution, you've put up all these archaeologists. The Egyptian guy couldn't be compelled to come testify. So he's not, they never got a human witness. They just had archaeologists saying, it's a forgery. No, it's not. Yes, it is. They never could agree. So the judge has finally said to the prosecution, you have not made your case here. And come back in 6 months and tell me what you want to do, because I'm not convinced that these are forgeries, nor that this man is guilty. And he's got wonderful, wonderful lawyers. Personally, I don't think the scientists who call this stuff forgeries have a vendetta or any kind of motive to be lying about it. So, you know, he may well just walk because the archaeologists were unable to persuade. There's a subjective underbelly to biblical archaeology. It's a place where proof for belief and science meet.
Yeah. So, but there still are some academics who say that it's not a forgery.
Absolutely. There are people who say it's not a forgery. There are people who say it is. The Israeli government's panel of scholars believe that it's fake. They analyzed it with microscopes. They analyzed with chemical analyses. They found glue in the letters. The epigraphers who looked at the tablet say that, you know, there's no way that anybody ancient wrote this. Whoever wrote this was thinking in modern Hebrew. So, you know, they don't really have a motive, I think, to be making that up. However, what happened was it's almost like an O.J. Simpson trial where the lawyers have, he's got extremely expensive lawyers, and they've just, you know, these archaeologists and scholars are used to these sleepy students at best asking them questions.
Right.
not the most expensive lawyers in Israel.
Wow.
And they've been falling down on the job.
What a story. What a story.
It's a bunch of, I'm telling you, there's some characters in here that I will never forget meeting.
Nina Burley, the new book is Unholy Business, A True Tale of Faith, Greed, and Forgery in the Holy Land. It's a fantastic story, Nina. Great job.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.